And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey, everybody. How was your Halloween?
Happy November. I don't know if you have heard her, but Mariah has gotten significantly louder.
I think I hear her now. Is that?
Sorry, I just blew out your eardrums. Don't want. Honestly, and I hate to say this, I think I know the backup vocals to that way better than the actual ones.
So what you guys might not know is that Abby is actually very musically talented, and she can actually sing.
I don't know about
and it's
that.
Actually pretty good. So we get little snippets of it, and I'm here for it, and I love it.
You
but
guys?
We got a few messages that were like completely unrelated to the episode last week, and they were like, I just have to say, Abby hit those notes. And I'm like, she did though, didn't she?
Thank you. When I try, it works out, and when I don't, it doesn't work for anybody, and they all out. And that's okay.
I would give anything to hear you sing to me, so.
I was trying to think of like a funny, creepy song that I could just come up with on spot, but I don't have any. I'm sorry.
It's fine. All I need to do is go in the car with you, and we put on like a fall Hozier playlist, and we're jamming.
Weird ADHD thing for anybody else out there. Y'all get bored when you drive, yeah? Because I do. And so the only way to like stim enough for my brain to be like active and safely driving is to like have a jam sesh of some kind. Or I'm like, let me look at my text. Don't do that. Or like, let me look at my watch. Or like, I wonder what this thing happens. And then suddenly I'm everywhere and nowhere all at once. And it's incredibly unsafe. So really, belting saves lives.
So funny you say that. This morning I was listening to a podcast and I was driving to work. And one of the roads I normally take was closed. So I had to like go a different route. But like, I know how to get there. I've done this. And apparently between passing the road that I was supposed to take that was blocked and passing the entrance I should have taken, I just completely forgot.
Yeah.
So I just drove straight for 2.5 miles in the wrong direction, just like chilling by myself.
Popping
and then
around.
Out loud, I went, Allison, what? Turn around. What are you doing?
Allison, Yui. Now.
I was like, get. So I literally broke the law, pulled over, waited for people to go, turned around in the middle of everything, thought I saw a cop coming. I was like, great.
Oh. But ticket free?
Ticket free. I made it there okay.
Ayo.
Probably wasn't the smartest decision. But yeah, completely distracted, just in the zone. And I was like, whoa.
What the hell?
Where are you going?
I know. I do that sometimes coming here or like leaving here. I'll go to leave the way that I used to before I moved. And then I'm like, oh, well.
Abby got pulled over by the same cop twice in like 2 weeks for the same thing leaving my house.
No, two different things. Two different things. One was
sure
speeding.
That?
One was my taillight, though. And it was the same day it went out. And he was like, that's out. And I was like, I was like, don't pull me over again. You hear me? Have one of your buddies do it. I can't see you anymore.
I cannot see you again.
It's over between us.
At this point, I'm going to have to invite you to Christmas.
I know. And it was
We've spent a lot of time together.
I don't know if you recognize me. The first time definitely was on me. But the second one, I'm still annoyed about. Because I was like, that was 1 week apart. And you said, this bitch hasn't had enough of me yet. But to be honest with you, I don't know if he would pull me over since I got my new car.
I know.
I haven't said that on here yet, I don't think.
I know. I love it.
It's so nice.
I didn't like driving it. My only reason for that was because it was so big.
Yeah.
And I'm not used to a big vehicle. And I had to push her steering wheel all the way in. I pushed the seat all the way up, tilted it down, lifted the ass up. I'm like,
every time I get
you couldn't get in after me.
Any car that you drive, I'm like, I'm a giant.
No. No, you're not. You're fine.
I was like, a doll was driving my car.
Yes.
American Girl doll. I didn't know you knew how to drive, but it's been really fun. It's been good. I like my new little SUV. It's very good.
She suits you.
I like her quite a bit.
She'll be good in these New England winters.
And I think I finally figured out a name.
Yeah?
Yes.
Is it going to be?
Okay, so my and Allie's, so good friend of the pod, Emily, I have named it after one of her family members.
Yes.
It's good. It's very sweet. It's very funny, but I like
it. Is it Deanne?
It's Deanna.
Deanna.
Yes.
Oh, we heard Deanna.
But anyway, that's all that's new with me. How about you?
Well, I wanted to just say thank you to our listeners.
Yeah.
Because we got so much love from my cookie post.
Yeah, we really did.
And talking about cookie, if you guys didn't hear last episode, Abby's really good at editing because there were some tears. I fought those bitches off because
You did a good job.
Can't keep crying. But yeah, my dear cat Cookie passed away and we just got so much love from our listeners because we're all just animal people.
Yeah.
I think
we heart
look
pod
at the Venn diagram of everything and I think they overlap by four. I think there's the animal people.
Mm-hmm.
There's the makeup girlies.
Oh, yes.
There's the I'm your mom friend text me when you get home.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the true crime circle. And we all overlap in there.
Oh, yeah.
And so we got a lot of just really positive, happy, lovely messages. So I just want to say thank you. If you guys send us anything on the Instagram page, you are 99.99% of the time talking to me.
Yeah.
So I love interacting with you guys. I know it's always weird. I try to be oh, by the way, this is Allie, in case you were I really wanted to talk to Abby and I hate this bitch. Sorry, you're stuck with me. Stuck with me.
No, they're not. You have told me before when people are asking about an episode I did or have questions or whatever. So I'll pop on there. I just am not, I am not social media-y talented. So
I would not claim that I am, but Abby does so much for the pod with all of the editing. She is our techie girl.
I am the Freddy of this iCarly duo.
We make it work.
Oh, we do.
We do just fine.
And it's the two of us. Oh, hey. Random. Sorry. Apparently the ADHD is ADHD-ing.
Yep.
But would you guys want any specific Christmas merch from us? An ornament or something that's kind of holiday themed? Because we could do that, but I would love to know.
Yeah, can you guys let us know? That also brings me to my next point, which Ooh. Is Instagram related. I put quite a few polls and open chat things on there, and we got so many of our listeners responding to us. Mm-hmm. It was just really cool to interact with you guys. You guys said that you wanted cults and you wanted a mix of everything. That's some foreshadowing. We are in some shit today.
For the month, baby.
But also, we asked, where are you listening from? We have a lot of Canadian listeners. We have a Yes. lot of listeners from all over the country here in the U.S. We have a listener in Taiwan that just happened to be
Yes.
chilling on Instagram with us. So I just think that's awesome. So I promise I will do more things like that if you like things like that.
We like them. But it's just
really cool for us to be able to interact with you. And I say we, it's me, sitting in my jammies, all just excited to...
In your gym jams. Yeah. Sending me screenshots. I love it.
Yeah, because we sit in my house and we are usually in our comfy cozies and we're having the conversations we were going to have anyway. So the fact that the table that we're at can just get bigger and bigger and that people can join and that people feel comfortable enough reaching out to us, we just want this to be a space where whoever you are, there's room for you. We're here to learn what we can, and we're going to have to get through it with humor, because if you don't, you're crying.
You laugh or you cry, and we cry quite a bit, so we choose to laugh when we can.
That's what we have to do. So we love you guys, and we really appreciate everything. And if you love us, too, and you want to leave us 5 stars, we'd be, thrilled.
We would really love it. Even if you wanted to support the pod, help pay for some of the costs of recording system and software and the things that we need to do that. Or buy us a little coffee, because we love it when you guys do that. And thank you, because we see them and we love them. And if we're not in a spot to do that, absolutely fine. It's the holidays. Who is? Please. If you want to support us, that 5-star review or a comment or a follow is the world to us. It does so much.
And don't forget to tell a friend.
Truly. That'd be cool.
I learn about my favorite podcasts from other people.
Yeah.
I like the recommendations. I enjoy it. I like listening to a bunch of different things.
Hell yeah.
I'm a busy gal. I can't clean the house without a podcast. Don't even try.
No. And I drive all the time.
I know.
I love a podcast.
It gets me through the day. So please.
All right, but are you ready?
Let's get into it.
Hell yes.
I'm so excited. I know nothing about what we're talking about except that a listener requested it.
Yes.
And that it's, I think we're getting a little culty.
Oh, we're definitely getting culty.
Okay, go.
So, yoo-hoo, pod's on, skippers, stop skipping. Hi, it's time.
Tune in.
Hey, pod's on. So hi, hello, and welcome, or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
Guys.
So sweet. Today, we are starting a series on a group I have been fucking fascinated by, and I want to explore into, like, the psychology, the leader, and whether or not we can truly articulate this as a cult in our opinions. I do want to start this series a little differently than others before and make sure explicitly off the top that we give a disclaimer here that anything in this episode is nothing more than the research produced by journalism, documentaries, news articles, op-eds, and other reputable sources, and the opinions of how the hosts of this podcast might interpret that research. This is not in any way a statement meant to demean or malign any individual, group, religion or spirituality, business, organization, or any element that we speak of in these episodes. And if you want my favorite little ending from a little bit culty podcast, anyone or anything.
Yes.
I also want to start by saying that there needs to be a gigantic, huge, flashing red light, slap you in the face kind of trigger warning for this series, this whole series. This one, to however many parts there are, my guess is 3 or 4, all of it, the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we're going to be talking about maybe cults, psychology, childhood abuse, sexual abuse, suicide, coercive control, narcissism, and even torture in this series. And I wish I could give you a warning every time one pops up, and I'll do my best to when I can. But it is so ubiquitous here that I simply cannot, or I'd be giving you one every sentence. So I'll do my best, but proceed with caution, please. And feel free to skip or take it in chunks as you need. So today we're starting our series on Teal Swan.
Which is incredible because I've never heard those words together before. I have no idea what this is.
Teal Swan is a self-proclaimed spiritual guide who alleges that she specializes in working with people who are suicidal, profoundly traumatized, or just need help in their personal or spiritual journeys. I'd like to thank our listener, Paul, and his wife for requesting this.
Thank you.
Thank you. It truly, suffice it to say, I am like neck deep in this shit, and I only have you to thank. I'd also like to call attention to the sources I've linked down below. I have consumed a gross amount of hours in podcasts, documentaries, and media about this case. I would like to highlight the Deep End documentary Jennings Brown and Gizmodo's podcast series called The Gateway, and A Little Bit Culty for their coverage of this group, basically. Mm-hmm. The Deep End was a docuseries produced by a team that went to live with or investigated Teal for 3 years. Jennings Brown was the first to do so with his podcast series, The Gateway. And A Little Bit Culty is the podcast run by Sarah and Nippy, the whistleblowers for NXIVM.
If you haven't listened to our NXIVM series, I would highly recommend that. If you want another one of Abby's hyperfixation deep dives, I'd point you there.
Also check out The Vow. I think that's on HBO. It might be on Hulu, but that's great about the NXIVM basically shut down. Phenomenal. But anyway, they did a 2-part interview with Jennings Brown, and it was so helpful. But I found all of them particularly invaluable to understand just what we're looking at here today.
So when we talk about Teal Swan, Teal Swan's a person.
Yes. Teal Swan's a person. And here's where it gets kind of iffy, because Teal Swan has like a million followers. Some of you have probably heard of her, and some of you probably like what you've seen, because social media wise, she seems to have a pretty big following, but it's really the people that are closest to her that are the ones that get that cult question mark. Which is a little concerning regardless.
It's kind of backwards, because normally the outermost circles from like outside looking in can look at that like NXIVM and be like, that's a fucking cult.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those in it are like, I want to reach a higher power. I want a deeper level of understanding. I want a higher level of education. That's not available elsewhere. Like, they don't look at it like that. That's how they get you.
Right. Exactly.
Crazy.
So it's just really interesting. But these series, I don't know. I just really appreciated the input by those journalists that were allowed in, like truly in. Jennings Brown got to do multiple interviews with Teal herself.
I'm so surprised by that.
I know. The Deep End documentary, that film crew or that documentary crew was there for like 3 years.
That's devotion.
It's a long time. And that's a lot of open doors that they provided them. So it's very interesting. But as of writing this, like, first part, I've spent 19 hours consuming media for this, not including writing, editing, or recording time. So we've done our research.
Damn.
So without further ado, let's jump into part one on Teal Swan and the Teal Tribe. About time for True Crime's first genuine investigation on, is it a cult? And spoiler alert, all signs point to yes.
Ooh.
So first things first, let's give you a rundown of this series because it is a significantly bigger plate than I expected when I initially took this on. Today we're going to do a general overview with a lot of information on psychology. Like, it's going to be heavy psychology today.
Your favorite.
It is. We're also going to talk about who Teal is and what she does and why the group is being questioned as a cult. And some pertinent information in Teal's background, mostly the Satanic Panic. We will eventually, later in this series, cover the questionable practices of the group in depth, such as potential coercive control, why Teal's haters have nicknamed her the Suicide Catalyst,
ooh,
and why her followers claim that she has healed them, the red flags, the investigation on the group as a cult by a private investigator that they hired, as well as results of that. But like I said, this is a big plate. And we're only going to get the full picture in small bites. So we're going to get into it, but I'll talk about my formal background in a little bit. But the one thing that I want you to know is that I am who I am because of my dad. This is relevant, I swear. But he always encouraged me to ask why. School might have planted that seed, but he watered it with every deep conversation, entertainment on philosophical questions, and pursuit of education that I had. And it is only because of Mr. Abel Dabelson that we have this story today.
Oh, Mr. Abel Dabelson.
So I'd like to thank him, but also put this in here as a reminder of why I'm doing this. I need to know why. I have to know why. I have to know why, and I have to know how.
Mm-hmm.
For pretty much everything. And in this case, it was really like a what? A huh? A why? A how and a what? Why?
Mm.
Like over and over and over again. As evidenced by the rest of my life, it seems I'm never satiated with a surface level answer. So today, I'll be taking a page from Teal's book and we're going to dive into the deep end of Teal Swan.
Oh, no.
Today, again, will be a lot of background in psychology, but let's start with what we're analyzing. So let's talk Teal Swan and the Teal Tribe. We're going to start with what Teal Swan currently offers. If you go to her website's About section, this is what it reads as of October 29th, 2024 at 2:20 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Hmm.
And I'm truly reading off of the page. New thought leader, best-selling author, international speaker, and human development expert. With a mission to reduce human suffering and create positive world change, Teal Swan is a new thought leader who specializes in human development, relationships, and trauma healing. She has over a decade of experience working with people of all walks of life, having facilitated retreats and life-changing workshops in large venues worldwide, and reaching an audience in the millions on all major social media platforms. She is also a renowned author of 6 books, one of which is The Completion Process, a book in which she details the comprehensive and unique method of trauma healing that she created, which promotes addressing trauma to, quote-unquote, put ourselves back together again. She is a best-selling author, and her books have now been translated into 6 languages. Further down on the page, it says, in order to promote healing for others, Teal reflects on things about humanity, the world, and the universe that humanity perceives to be positive. But she will also reflect things about humanity, the world, and the universe that humanity does not want to accept, own, or integrate. Simply put, Teal's teachings are not recommended for those who simply want to feel good. She is recommended for those who want the truth, even if the truth hurts. The reality is impartial. It isn't personal. It simply shows you what is so. Okay. It should also be noted on her website that she has a quote, which I presume is from herself, like in quotes, you know, that says, without the abuse and suffering I experienced, I would be someone who could give you a lot of esoteric information about the universe at large, but who would have no real grasp on the reality of human suffering or how to heal it. The gift of my own suffering is that I now have the full picture, and that drastically changed both what I teach and the way that I teach.
Okay.
So
it sounds good.
It sounds great.
I mean, it sounds fantastic. I'd love to know what the credentials were, because I jotted down human development expert.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is, okay. So, like a, okay.
Yeah.
So I have that. Reducing human suffering. That sounds...
That's a big claim.
I'm...
It's a big goal.
Ears perked up. I will say that's a very large claim, but great goal.
Yeah.
I love to see that. I do like this trauma healing.
Yeah,
this
sounds lovely. Great.
But it...
To me, the biggest red flag of all of this is a lack of explanation on what the credentials are, but also B should probably be A, which is she says her goal is to reduce human suffering and then very explicitly says this is not for people who want to feel better.
Yes.
Or, you know, who just want to feel good. You have to know the truth. It doesn't matter if the truth hurts, which isn't necessarily antithetical, but isn't necessarily following suit exactly.
I mean, I think that it's great to say, okay, I have this trauma, I can't change it, so how can I use this to make me better? How can this not be for nothing? How can this give me a deeper understanding in myself?
No, exactly. And we'll get to her suffering later. But the long of it short is that Teal Swan essentially is a self-proclaimed leader and guru for trauma, psychology through the realm of spirituality, and goes about speaking to her audience through retreats, books, and social media like YouTube, Spotify, her own blog, and has even used platforms like TikTok and Facebook. Teal has videos addressing a huge range of topics, from suicide to fucking cryptocurrency.
Oh.
No shit. She claims that she has this authority due to her own suffering and traumatic upbringing and experiences, and that she has extrasensory skills, in which she claims can help her read auras. She technically says she has access to the Akashic Records, which is every thought that has ever been thought by anybody in the universe, but that's beside the point.
Okay.
She also says these extrasensory skills can help her see energies and even see into your body to your digestive tract and organs. Teal alleges to use this history and gifts to identify new ways of healing people and hopes to help heal the world of many of its problems. Something else I believe to be necessary to put up front here is that Teal claims she knows that she has the makings for a cult, and that it is this very knowledge that makes her safe.
She used the C word.
She does. She says, listen, I know that I could have a cult, but it's because I know that I could that I'm safe, that you should know I would never do that.
I think Keith Raniere knew.
Well, she knows her power, and from what I've researched, claims that it is the basis for which you can trust that she will not abuse it. E! News brought up another disclaimer Teal uses that I thought was important, which is that her quote-unquote Ask Teal videos also open with the disclaimer that she is not a medical professional, nor should her content be taken for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a real quick interjection here. I do really love that on her about page, she has like a frequently asked questions group, like further down. And these questions include things about her name, her diet, her relationship to sports, her Myers-Briggs personality test results, including her Enneagram and another one that I'm forgetting.
Are they really frequently asked?
Apparently. She also has information on if she has pets and what her tattoos mean. So that there's that.
Did anybody really ask?
They're frequently asked questions,
frequently,
Allison.
Frequently, how frequently?
That's a general word. So, let's talk about how she helps people and what she's offering. You can access Teal's message and content through buying her books, finding her social media platforms on YouTube, Spotify, TikTok, and Instagram. You could also attend an event, which are typically workshops and retreats. Or you can buy her paintings, which she claims to help clear auras, chakras, and other woo-woo hippie stuff. No judgment. I like my own fair share of woo-woo hippy-dippy shit. Okay? But let's start with a little, like a smidgen, tiny, tiny bit of the background that we have on Teal. I think this is important because it comes up often in her claims of why she has this authority.
She can't possibly have been named Teal at birth.
Teal was born Mary Teal Bosworth.
Okay.
In birth, and then decided to go by Teal.
It is kind of cool. I do think it's cool.
Yeah, it's a good name. And it's cool that it was in her actual name, you know?
I like it.
She was born in Santa Fe, New Mexico on June 16th, 1984, which might make her a Gemini, I think.
That adds up.
Although she did grow up in Logan, Utah. And that's important, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, too. But here's the synopsis of it. And I apologize because it will not be short at all, and yet it is still the shortest I can give it to you. Teal seemingly self-reports 13 years of childhood abuse that included ritualistic satanic cult abuse, psych hospitals and programs, sexual abuse, significant mental health, which also resulted in said hospitalization and programs, but also in various attempts for suicidality and suicidal ideation. Teal has claimed that she has these extrasensory abilities, including telepathy, the ability to talk with the dead, seeing energy flow, and more. Teal says this led to ostracizing and bullying, which fed into other mental health concerns. And has said in clips of her own workshops or videos from the documentaries that I've watched that she's been diagnosed with everything under the sun, tried the drugs, and nothing else worked, which is why she does what she does today.
So she seems pretty transparent about all of that stuff.
Incredibly. So, yeah.
Okay.
I think it's very interesting to understand this background because it bleeds into a lot of why I think she has no trust for modern day psychology. Which is its own bag of worms that will open soon.
But she also calls her she calls herself an expert on human development and
yes, like, which are psychological based
and trauma.
Yes,
which is pretty psych heavy.
Yep, I'd say so.
Okay, Teal.
A little trigger warning here, as we're gonna get into some of the surface level details of her self-reported abuse. Teal has stated that a family friend, who was a veterinarian that she called Doc, abused her for years by kidnapping her in the middle of the night, taking her to a satanic cult, and being drugged by ketamine and horrifically abused. This abuse included a variety of crimes, from sexual abuse to reportedly being sewn into a corpse to seeing children killed and murdered and, like, fried on grills.
What?
There's a lot. There's a lot. We will get into more later, but the veterinarian does deny this, and her family has denied to comment on this for many, many journalists and documentary crews. Teal also talks about her struggles with mental health, suicidality, and extra consequences of those issues with her extrasensory abilities. Teal was able to see a therapist starting in her late teens or early 20s, Barbara Snow, who helped her recover some of these memories of this abuse and identify a lot of why she has these issues. Teal became extremely therapized over the years and has a decent understanding of how a lot of the basics work. Now, she uses that to be a motivational speaker, author, and professional that she claims is specifically to help others going through the same kind of traumas in life and to begin to live authentic lives. Okay. That's the brief coverage. So let's talk psychology. This is going to be long and a little heady, and I apologize because we won't get that much further into Teal yet this episode. But everything I'm going to review is incredibly relevant, tied back, and important to understand this series moving forward, because we have to learn the real terms and processes for a lot of what we're talking about today to understand why what she's preaching isn't necessarily true, or at least not in any way empirically based in evidence.
Gotcha. Her perceptions and opinions on things that are otherwise already confirmed.
Yes, and teachings and the way she explains these to people, because I think there is a lot of stress in psychology. I think there's a lot of stigma around people going to therapy and talking through these things, which I can appreciate anybody who is starting a conversation on this. I think it's good. And I think that we all deserve to know a little bit more about how the electrical unset jello in our head that moves everything we do works. That, by the way, is what your brain is. It's like literally unset jello. It's wild. But anyway, not the point. So we are going to talk about a lot of psych terms, and we're going to talk through a lot of psychology. And I want to do this now because we're going to dive into Teal Swan's sort of teachings, maxims, beliefs, projected content, whatever you want to call it, in the next episode. But it's a mix of a lot of real terms with a bastardization of a lot of how quite a bit of these different psychology phenomena work, which of course requires a true basic understanding of psychology. So I want you all to have this for comparison, because if we know how it works, we know where she goes wrong. Basically.
I'm down.
First, though, I want to give a little bit of background on me and why I think you should trust my interpretation of some of this information.
Yeah, Abby.
First, I'm not a certified therapist in any way. At all. I'm not your therapist. I have my bachelor's degree in psychology and criminal justice. I got a master's in criminal justice, and this is not me claiming to give mental health advice, diagnoses, or in any way state authority or falsely claim information. So everything here will be my personal opinion with a background of education in the field and working with behavior and safety planning professionally. I also want to tell you one last thing that I'm not, and that is making things up. I will, of course, link any resources for this, but I'll also be pulling from my degree and educational background, as well as my opinion and thoughts, and I'll be very clear when I'm pulling from a source so that you know. Also, if I'm getting very specific, I'm even pulling from two specific classes called cross-cultural psychology and humanistic psychology, where phenomenal foundations for this kind of thing were taught. Okay, now in not a weird little nerd terms. First, let's talk about trauma. Trauma actually refers to two different things. There's little T trauma and there is big T trauma. Little T trauma is described by Psychology Today as events that exceed our capacity to cope and cause a disruption in emotional functioning. Small T traumas happen to everyone to a degree. Part of that humanistic psychology class I had taught me one very valuable lesson in life, and that is that the older you get, the more you experience. And the more you experience, the more the probability goes that that is going to be a traumatic one.
Which great.
Is also why.
It's great.
Well, I mean, just purely numbers, right? It's not like it goes up exponentially the older you get. It's just more options for trauma to happen.
Yeah, the more life experience you have, the more likely that experience could not be positive.
Right. So naturally, the older the person, the more trauma there generally is. Depression is an incredibly natural and common result of a life being lived, which is good to know that nobody is alone in that, and that it's more statistically probable that we will experience traumas in time. And as far as small T trauma, Psychology Today also says while one small T trauma might not lead to significant distress, multiple compounded small T traumas, particularly in a short span of time, are more likely to lead to an increase in distress and trouble with emotional functioning. Reading off of Psychology Today's page here, a large T trauma is distinguished as an extraordinary and significant event that leaves the individual feeling powerless and possessing little control in their environment. Such events could take the form of a natural disaster, terrorist attack, sexual assault, combat, a car plane accident, etc. Helplessness is also a key factor of large T traumas, and the extent of the experienced helplessness is far beyond that of a small T trauma. Large T traumas are more readily identified by the experiencer, as well as those who have any familiarity with their plight. And I want to highlight here that these are the larger events, right? And yes, the helplessness is a key factor here, and that's going to come up later. That's huge. Because for a lot of people, you can go through something like a car accident and walk away without PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone can, but a huge part in that is feeling like you have some control over your escape and your well-being afterwards. So another thing I've been doing right now is reading The Body Keeps the Score. Have you heard of this?
I have heard of this book. I recommend it.
It is so fucking good. It's so heady. It's so deep. So like I've been taking it in chunks.
It's very much about trauma and how your literally your body stores it.
Yep.
And of course your brain files it away. And if I'm not mistaken, it kind of goes over the process of like, okay, so you have this big traumatic event and you behave in a certain way, whatever it is, you fight, fly. I mean, again, we're not really mm-hmm. supposed to like reduce it down to that, but you will behave in a certain way, your right. response to that. And your brain sort of files that away of like, okay, when this happens, I do this because I lived long enough now to be through it
yep.
that this worked for me.
Yes.
So now when I have similar things like that happen, it might surprise me, but my brain is going to go back in time to what got me through the last time.
Yes. And we're going to repeat that.
And it's really confusing and frustrating for a lot of survivors of trauma because it's like, I didn't want to do that. Or like, you feel like your body got hijacked or your brain mm-hmm. got hijacked. And it's like, no, your body remembers things that you aren't connecting the dots on yet.
Exactly. And the other part of it too, and I recommend this book so heavily. I think it's a lot of neurology and psychology explained in a very approachable way. So I would heavily recommend. And I've literally been finding out so many fun facts that I'm like, I'll like text Sam and I'll be like, you'll never guess what I found out. They did this fucking brain scan. And apparently in people with trauma, and then I'll just ramble off a bunch of shit. And Sam's like, cool.
If you guys don't know, Sam is Abby's very lovely partner.
Yes.
Not just a random person we're talking about if you're new here. If you found us because you searched Teal Swan.
Yes. We heart Sam. We're Team Sam all the way. But big T trauma also usually causes people to avoid the triggers, like putting a military uniform away in storage or avoiding a gas station you were robbed at. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So little T traumas can be like, wow, man, my friend moved away and I'm really upset about it. Or I have a chronic condition. And big T traumas are like, wow, that hurricane was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way that those change are usually the big T traumas are easy to recognize because you're like, wow, you were in a hurricane. That's really bad.
Yeah.
And the little T ones, while they don't always disrupt to the same degree, can if there's a ton of them in a short period of time.
Yeah, so you they might can almost like add up to a big T.
Yes. You're like, why are you acting like you were in a hurricane? You just found out you had a chronic condition and your friend moved away and your car broke down and you felt really scared at that gas station. And now you're freaking out. But that's how your brain works. It's so weird. It's so lovely. Trauma has a pretty significant impact on the brain, too. As imagined, if trauma is defined as a disruption or something that exceeds our capacity to cope, it's also a disruption to the way our brain is processing or functioning at the time. I think another important part of this to touch on is also childhood development and how your brain evolves as you grow. Because obviously as your brain is developing, it can handle less. It means less is required for it to be technically trauma. Childhood development and also brain development is complex and like way more nuanced than I could ever fit into this episode. And a lot of it, I don't even understand. I didn't specialize in it and I didn't spend a lot of time trying to figure that out because that's not what we're talking about today. But that's part of the beauty of the brain. We fully haven't hacked it yet. But research does say that we've made monumental progress in the last 50 years in neuroscience. Trauma's impact on the brain happens in three general areas: the amygdala, the hippocampus, and the prefrontal cortex. I'm going to read off of a great article from arcmonroe.org to explain these three and how it impacts them. So, the amygdala's job is to help control emotions, survival instincts, and memory. This is the area of the brain responsible for our fight or flight response, that adrenaline response. For someone who has experienced trauma, the amygdala can become hyperactive, making the person intensely aware of everything around them. This is the brain's way of making sure that that person is able to get away from people, places, or events which might cause them harm. The second area of the brain that is impacted is called the hippocampus. This area of the brain aids in learning and memory. Studies have shown that people who have experienced traumatic events may have a smaller hippocampus than those who don't. Research has shown that this may be due to hormones that are related to some experiences of frequent high levels of stress. Prolonged exposure to these hormones can damage or destroy cells in the hippocampus. And the third area of the brain that is impacted is called the prefrontal cortex. This part of the brain is responsible for regulating emotions. The prefrontal cortex helps to control the activity of the amygdala. For people who have not experienced significant trauma, their prefrontal cortex will signal to the amygdala that certain situations or people are safe. This calms down that fight or flight response. However, in people that have experienced trauma, the prefrontal cortex will have a hard time regulating fear and other emotions. This can lead to frequent feelings of panic and anxiety, as well as dysfunctional reactions to situations that are not harmful. Got it?
Got it.
Good. Basically, that's saying that trauma tends to fuck with memory, mm-hmm. adrenaline responses, and regulating emotions, which is an unfair recipe for disaster, in my opinion.
Rude.
If you're hyper aware and more likely to become upset in some way or dysregulated, and you have a harder time regulating, which I think would then possibly lead to more trauma, since trauma is anything that exceeds your emotional capacity to cope, it's like a very slippery slope of exponential traumas.
Mm-hmm.
Which would likely compound to some of that lower T trauma that leads to higher chances of experiencing compounded lower T trauma. And then when you get into treatment, you realize that your memory of all of it is messed up because trauma impacts that memory part of your brain. So you might not even have a full episodic memory or like memory of a full event or sequence of events that makes you understand why it was trauma. Because your hippocampus is smaller and it's working less, so it's recording less.
And that's why EMDR is really great.
It's awesome. So then let's go to memory in the brain normally. As the world's briefest view is encrypting, storing, and recall. So basically, you take in the stimuli, you watch your best friend take a sip of coffee. You encode this into your brain, which then subconsciously begins to store it or commit it to memory as that trip to Starbucks. And as time goes on, you recall these by saying to your best friend, "Hey, do you remember that time we went to Starbucks?"
Yes.
And you probably picture in your brain them taking a sip of their coffee. Which is obvious because if you didn't think of it, it wouldn't be a memory, but that's besides the point.
Yes.
Now, you'd think that the memory sequence would be to encrypt, store, retrieve, retrieve, retrieve every time you see it. Like a PDF. You open it and every time it's the same and it's the same file that you open and you just access it whenever you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
But psychologists have found that memory actually repeats all three steps. So every time that you're recalling, you're also encrypting and storing the memory again. So it's more like a Word doc that's open that never gets saved. It's always save as, and it's always the newest copy, and the rest of it goes away.
Yeah, the newest copy replaces the old copy.
Right. And due to this and a whole bunch of vulnerabilities to our brains, this rewrite of information each time actually is very fallible, meaning people's memories tend to change and evolve over time due to the system, and so it's easy to start to believe things that never happened. Fun pop culture fact, this is actually where we get into like the mandala effect, like that Berenstain versus Berenstain Bears kind of thing.
Mm.
Because every time you think of it and you convince yourself that that thing was true, that becomes your new memory. Trauma can impact memory in a number of ways, but I'm going to talk about how it impacts episodic memory, which is memory of an event. I linked a great handout that talks about how trauma impacts all different kinds of memories too. But the hippocampus, which makes that episodic memory, is smaller in people with trauma, right? So they remember less. And the hippocampus can also be disrupted in the middle of trauma, which means it leads it to store the event in a choppier, more fragmented way. Which is why typically if people have trauma, they don't tell you every detail of everything that happened. They'll say, he was wearing a red shirt, and then we were in a different place. And then this was happening, but there's not really like a, and then he did this, and then we drove here. Like, it is just, this is what happened, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
This is why survivors of trauma often have these memory gaps during the event and can sometimes only feel like they remember pieces. I linked an article about memory distortion and trauma, and it found evidence to suggest that people often have intense emotions and remember trauma as significantly more traumatic than what occurred. Which kind of makes sense. This study also found evidence to show that of the people who may remember more trauma than they experienced, they also have more re-experiencing than those people who didn't. So basically, as time goes on and you're remembering this trauma because you have a more fragmented memory, my interpretation is that you're filling that in with what you can only imagine must have led to these events. And because of a bunch of the weaknesses in the way that our brains store memory, the more you make these assumptions, the more you think of it, the more you encode it as the memory, the worse it becomes. And this is not at all, big, huge disclaimer. This is not to say that you shouldn't believe people who have trauma in what they're telling you. This isn't everybody. This happens to some people.
Mm-hmm.
But even the people that it happened to are living with the results of that trauma, whether or not that is what occurred in that moment, because they're living with the idea of this memory in their life.
I also think it matters the circumstances of the event. So like if we're talking about a hurricane or like a natural disaster, right? You used the hurricane example before. Like that can obviously be traumatic. You can, you know, even just the fear of losing your home, like the fear of a life altering, your life is in danger or your loved one is, that is traumatic, and that can be.
Well, and also that's, again, I just want to clarify, like I'm not saying that if you're re-experiencing it, you automatically are remembering more trauma than what happened, but the more you re-experience it, the more your brain re-encodes. And the more that that happens, the more external forces there are to sort of manipulate that.
Mm-hmm.
And that can even include intrusive thoughts, which is like kind of an OCD anxiety symptom that a lot of people deal with. And like some examples are people who are afraid that, you know, maybe they are a pervert, or some people have hyperfixations around, some people are fixated around not wanting to be gay or having a certain thing going on. And so they have these intrusive thoughts that that's true, not because it is true or that they've done these things, but because they're so afraid of them that they're trying to make sure it's not true. It's like kind of a hypervigilant part of the OCD anxiety spectrum. It's also kind of why if you're like driving in a one lane either way on a road, your brain's kind of like, what if you just whoop, like right in oncoming traffic, like whoop, and you're like, hold up, I don't know, I want to do that. That's certain death. I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And your brain's like, yeah, it's scary. It's not safe. What if you just whoop and it's like your brain's way of reminding you, don't do that.
But it's like, what if you did and you have to almost jog your own memory to be like, no.
Yes. And that's like a normal function of the brain. It's important. It's kept us alive for a long time. And for but some people, it gets a little out of hand. And that's okay.
And also these things about trauma and like the... it sort of like altering or shifting. Like this does not happen with everybody. Some people can tell a very, very straightforward, this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. It, we all process things differently. But if I'm going to guess, but I'm assuming that this woman is going to take advantage of those people who either processed it the way that you're talking about, mm-hmm. or is she's going to try to convince them that they did.
Yes.
Because you can play with memory that way too.
You can. And it's very fallible. It's very open to interpretation. It's very open to input by other people or your brain, wanted or not. And ultimately, even in people who aren't re-experiencing and having sort of like, I want to say PTSD symptoms. It doesn't mean they're diagnosed, but these symptoms of like a major traumatic event. Not all of them are going to feel this way, but all of them almost certainly will have some gaps in that memory. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be giant. It doesn't have to be like, I remember two clips of 3 hours of my life. But you're not going to remember everything. And people can take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, trauma being defined by its in the moment impact on your brain processing, which can disrupt the brain in a lot of ways in the future and in your memory, which is highly suggestible and often not always factually correct. It doesn't make it not your truth. It doesn't mean that that's not what you're processing and dealing with, but it might just not be 100% what happened in succession if we're looking at it as events.
Mm-hmm.
But what you recall and experience, again, is your reality, which needs to be considered when we look at Teal Swan, because we are eventually going to get to, I'm going to call concerning, other people have said entirely discredited, but I'll say concerning, memory play that she works with, where people sort of re-experience things and think back to traumatic events. And while that is most of the time fine, she has been accused of essentially implanting false memories into people, which can happen. We've seen that historically through multiple different facets. But when we get to things like this, we need to remember that your perception is your reality. If I'm convinced that I like did jumping jacks naked on top of the Sears Tower and it never happened, it doesn't matter. I'm still dealing with the memory of me doing this thing.
Yeah, even though in reality, that's not the case.
Right.
But your brain will react as if you did. And That's the really terrifying thing, and that's why, if you've noticed, and if you're a true crime listener, that eyewitness testimony is paid attention to so little now. We used to rely on that. It was like, well, if no one saw it, it didn't happen.
Right.
Whereas now we need to rely on more, like, quote-unquote concrete science, because memories are so easy to be tampered with.
Yes, you mean so it was suggestible.
It was a green shirt, wasn't it? Well, we think it was, here's the suspect wearing a green shirt. Did this look like the guy? Was this the guy? Oh, wait, I think he was wearing a green shirt.
That's a green shirt, yeah. Yeah.
And it's really easy. And it's not that this person is lying or intentionally trying to be malicious or change their story, but it's because our memories are inherently pretty suggestible and that them repeating it back to you, they now do believe this thing. Now this memory has been recoded with, he was wearing a green shirt.
Yeah, and it's so subconscious. Like, I don't think anybody does this purposefully. If they're doing it purposefully, they're lying. If they believe it, it's subconscious.
Like,
and that's just sort of how it goes. But I'm bringing this up for so many reasons. And I think if at any point in this series you get lost or confused, obviously, drop your questions down in like the Q&A below. We can touch on those. But mostly, feel free to like come back to this if you're like, what in the hell are we talking about? Because Teal Swan understands so much of this basis psychology, like the basics of psychology, of how things generally work, of how your brain generally adapts and moves to things. She knows. She's been in therapy a long time, and so a lot of what she talks about is true.
It's, to an extent.
Yes, it's always to the extent. So it's when you get to those more complex systems, it's where you get to her interpretation of a lot of these things that gets very concerning. Hallie and I actually watched her like introduction video, like her welcome about me, and she gets a lot of people. She likes to do like a vast statement that will get two people of either extreme. So you're likely to agree with at least something she says in every video.
Yeah, we watched the introductory one because I'm like, I gotta know what this lady looks like and what it sounds like. She's very attractive. She's very young. She looks like...
She kind of looks like the actress that played Robin in How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, I could see that.
Mixed with like Tati from YouTube.
I was thinking that, yeah. Yeah. There's that aspect of her with like a bit of Kristen Stewart in there, mm-hmm. like older Twilight versions. Why do we always talk about... We don't even like the movie. Anyway. sorry, but she can't squirt the ketchup.
No, it's been...
Unrelated.
It's been relevant because it's been Ho-a-Ho-a season.
Yes.
It's on the brain.
But this video, and we actually watched two of them, but the second one that we watched was like her voice over all these different scenes. And so she's like playing, especially if you consider politics, like...
Mm-hmm.
That's very divisive in our country right now. We're never going to talk about politics. This is your like safe space away from that.
Hell,
because
yes.
there's literally nowhere else left where you can just be left alone. So we're not going to have that discussion here about personal views. But what we will say is that if you watch that video, she is appealing to, I think, both conservatives and liberals in that.
Oh, yeah.
Republicans and Democrats, people who are... I care a lot about politics and I really don't, or I love the government or I hate it. Like in this video, she is able to reach both sides of the fence on that. So even if you don't agree with everything, and I don't think you can, you will find some things you're like, I have thought that, and that yeah. does piss me off, you know?
And she does this thing where like, you can kind of get stuck in a loop of her videos. Like you can keep watching and most of it sounds great. But again, a lot of it is these like overarching sweeping claims of like, yeah, you do feel bad that you can't stop climate change and fuck COVID and also the government and also the people and also
technology.
Do it, but don't. Like,
yeah. Have you ever wondered if big tech is just, you know, overreaching? And it's like, I have thought that.
Yeah.
I did.
And it's like, are you concerned that driving less and eating local and not shopping from Amazon takes care of your part in the climate crisis? And it's like, fucking of course. You have a conscience.
Like, but that at the same time, she sounds like if they tried to make Siri a little bit more human.
Yes. And also she does this thing. It's not that she never blinks, but she blinks
rarely.
So significantly less than I swear anybody else. And with like these piercing blue eyes looking straight into the camera.
And I'm like, why are you looking at me like that?
I know.
Like I need to look away.
Teeth?
And I'm in my own house.
Yeah.
I'm in my own house and you're making me look away.
But you'll see all of these videos and you probably agree with a lot of them. And some of them might be informative. Like
there's a reason why millions of people subscribe to this. It's not that all of these things that she's saying are false
or wrong
like,
or maligned
or out there.
Yeah.
Like these are things that like are designed to pull you in.
Yes. And they work. And truly the hard part here is I'm not trying to like stop her. I'm not trying to take her down. I'm not trying to malign in any way. But I am trying to say you need to be really careful because some of this is fact. And a lot of it is not.
And that can be the really tricky thing, especially in like when you want to consider celebrities or like leaders or anything like that, where you look at like if part of what they say is true and it's you can back it up and you can see it, then like it's really easy for you to be like, okay, I trust this source.
Yes.
And so now I believe all of the other things. And so the things that sound a little bit out there, if they can pull it back to, you know, a dotted line to something that you already believe as fact, then it's like, it's not that big of a...
it's not that far out
It's not
there.
That big of a stretch to make it to that next leap, even if it really is. Like, there's this really creative way that very manipulative people can connect all of those thoughts and really have you believe it in the end. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, it's a very interesting game of like, in my head, I think of it almost as like a multi-level marketing,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. Like the bottom line, the things that you're going to see first, the big general consensus sweeping accessible information is all going to be pretty minor and pretty true.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go up a step and it's like maybe a little less minor, mostly true. Some of it's fucking weird and some of it you can't prove.
Mm.
And then you go up another one and it's like you can tie it to that thing. But now she's playing on doubt. She's playing on people's trauma. She's playing on the fallacies of everybody's mind. And so it's this very slippery slope of like the further up you get or the further into it, the deeper you go, the more cautious you have to be. Which for most stable structures is not the case.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, very interesting. Very curious. Cognitive dissonance is a hell of a drug.
Make it a sticker.
But we talked about trauma and memory, which right now is the basis of what we're talking about today. So let's talk about the last part of our setup that we need to understand Teal. And that, dear listeners, is the satanic panic.
I did not know. That was not on my bingo card for this episode.
And it's like this every single part of this series.
Okay, so we're moving away from our psych focus and we're moving back to Teal.
Kind of.
Okay.
We're moving to the satanic panic, which we'll need to understand Teal next week.
Okay.
The satanic panic was a phenomenon that started in the 1980s. I mean, truly, it's been around forever. There's always been someone saying there's like a satanic cult ritualistically abusing people. But it got really big in the 1980s.
I don't know. I mean, I watched Hereditary for the first time last week, and that seems pretty real.
Yeah?
So.
You want a King Payman and all the naked, creepy old people in the woods?
Could you just put some fucking clothes on? I did not need to see that.
No one did. That was the scariest part of the movie. I was
hail.
Like, old lady boobs. Ah!
Swing low, sweet chariots, as Creed Bratton would say.
But the satanic panic we're talking about, specifically, started in the 1980s and gained popularity around then and into the 90s. It was generally debunked even by the FBI, but it is still remembered often today. This was a result of significant amount of cultural considerations, even down to the movies that were out at this time, but ultimately refers to a period where people had a growing belief in satanic ritualistic abuse, where satanic cults were behind countrywide ritualistic abuse of kids. Part of this included a now very highly controversial method of memory recollection therapy, or some people call it recovered memory therapy, meaning there's this belief that if something is so bad and so traumatic, your brain has the ability to entirely hide you from it, take it entirely subconscious that you don't even remember it, and then you can tap into that and pull it out somehow.
Which is possible in a very small percentage of people.
It is, and it's also very rare that anything that would be even similar to a big T trauma could be entirely removed from your psyche.
Mm.
A lot of people can, like, yeah, you can forget something and remember it. And for these big T traumas, sometimes you can remember part of that fragmented memory. And sometimes, most of the time, you get what you got.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the whole point of the trauma is that it disrupts how you're processing in that moment. So it's not like your brain recording all of this and saying, oh no, she can't handle that part. They can't handle that. He is not going to do well with that guy's shirt.
Right.
It's your brain going, oh shit, this is happening. Oh shit, this is happening. And that's all that's in your brain. So there's nothing to pull from.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the time, this is widely discredited because it's kind of made up. Not all of it. You know, it is possible, but it is highly unlikely, especially with big T traumas.
Right.
So like, yeah, I can get into a car and smell a certain smell and be like, oh my God, my ex-boyfriend had this Febreze in his car that I didn't remember before. And I wouldn't go into a store and be like, huh, I wonder what one he had.
Right.
But suddenly you're there. It doesn't mean that I'm going to say, wow, during that hurricane, I totally forgot happened. I was abused by a ritualistic cult.
Yeah.
You know, like, and there's also evidence for a lot of these things. For the trauma that was widely believed to be happening, the abuse that people claimed, there are very real physical evidence marks that should be there that many people don't have. So I want to talk about this because there are so many accounts of people remembering traumatic events that there is no other evidence ever happened. And this became such a growing panic that the FBI did a full fucking investigation. In fact, I think they even did one in Utah specifically, which is very curious. It's very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
But they literally had no evidence. It was shut down. They were like, no, I don't get it. A cool fun fact is that this year on Halloween, it was 30 years since the New York Times reported that, quote unquote, in a survey of more than 11,000 psychiatric and police workers throughout the country conducted for the National Center on Child Abuse and Neglect, researchers found more than 12,000 accusations of group cult sexual abuse based on satanic ritual, but not one that the investigators had been able to substantiate.
Damn.
And that can't be people assuming it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who are well-intended. They want kids to be safe. You want these people to be healthy. The kids, a lot of the time, and we'll get into this a little more probably next week, but I listened to a 3.5-hour interview with Teal's childhood best friend, who talked a lot about much of this. And I think it'll make a lot of sense as to who Teal is today. But part of what she was saying, Diana, was that she was so mentally ill. And this happens to so many people, right? I think the last time I looked, it was 1 in 5 people had a diagnosed mental illness. We know that not everybody goes and gets diagnosed, so that's the low end of the numbers, right? And this happens to a lot of people, but she was so ill that her family, at a time when psychology was really a budding and developing field, were like, something had to have happened to you. Like, how are you like this? Like, what happened? And she was like, I don't know. Like, what happened? What must have happened to me? Something terrible must have happened to me. And it's this fear, like, I want to say mongering, not that I think it was intentionally done, but it becomes this fixation of like, why am I like this? What's wrong with me? What happened to me? Because nobody can figure it out if it wasn't something terrifying and big and awful. And then you have this fixation with cults and satanic abuse and the worst thing you can think of. And suddenly kids are remembering this after being asked, like, did he touch you? Did they touch you there? Did you see this? Which are very leading questions.
Right.
And, you know, a lot has been looked into and developed and said on interviewing kids that are sexual abuse survivors. A lot of it these days is open questions.
Yeah, they're open-ended. They're not leading. And also, you have to remember that children often want to please you.
Yes.
So they are searching you for the answer you want to hear as much as you're searching them for the answer that you want to hear.
Yes.
And especially kids, even if they have been abused, don't want you to be upset with them.
No.
So they will say what they think you are looking for. And if you are adding these pointed questions and these, like, was it here? Was it this? Was it this? Was it this? At a certain point, the kid's going to say yes.
Right. And they probably believe that you're right, because everything else in a kid's life is usually that way. Like, kids want to please you for a number of reasons. A lot of them is like love and they look up to you. But also in these settings, like, kids' brains are developed to model and behave after the adults, because those people have survived to be adults. So mm-hmm. In their brains, it's ingrained that, like, we are modeling ourselves after successful quote-unquote species.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense to me. So they, yes, they want to please you on a surface level, but also on a very biological level. They're like, I need to do what they are telling me.
Because they lived long enough to be able to tell me it.
Right.
So they did something right. So I got to do it.
And so they'll say these things, they'll answer your questions. And today it can be a little more difficult to prove sexual abuse in that way, because the other thing about kids is that they're not always all that focused. So you can be like, what happened? And they'll be like, we played tea. And you're like, great. Anything else?
What's that, like, mean?
Also, the bear's name is Snuffleupagus. And you're like, cool. What about them? And they're like, oh, they were at tea time too. And then we played doctor. And you're like, hold up.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of doctor? Like, so it can be really difficult in that way. But also, it's significantly more healthy for kids when they're not forced to create memories like this. And, you know, not for nothing, there is evidence of like hypnosis working and these kinds of what I'll call surface level woo-woo hippie things, right?
Mm.
And it's not all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what I love about psychology is that it's not done. It is not a field that is by any stretch of the imagination done growing. But we can't get to a replicable, repeatable scientific understanding of what's happening without being wrong sometimes. That's part of the scientific process. And so, yes, go read what you can, try to understand what you can, but also have a little grace with some of that new age shit. Like, I believe that a lot of Eastern medicine and those practices are very real. They work for a very long time and a lot of people.
They've worked for thousands of years.
So I don't want to say that the only way to understand this stuff is through Western psychology, but I will say that Western psychology is the basis for understanding the intricacies and like the full-fledged picture. It's just moving really slowly,
mm-hmm.
really slowly. But what we have and what I've shared are things that are widely cited by many people in studies that are repeatable with results that are the same every time. And that's important because I'm not just saying I went downtown once and the bus was blue. So every bus is blue.
Right.
And that happens to a lot of people. You take your experience and you make that a universal truth.
You extrapolate that out to everyone everywhere.
Right. So the more times people say, oh no, I did this thing and I saw that too, the better of a chance we have at actually knowing what's going on. All of that to say, there was not one accusation of this ritualistic abuse that was able to be confirmed.
Yeah.
At all. Over 12,000 accounts. And ultimately, modern day psychology has raised significant red flags on this memory recollection process.
Mm.
Like we talked about, it's a really fallible thing.
Yes, it is.
And so, while many psychologists feel comfortable saying recovered memories is a phenomenon that's been entirely discredited, I tend to agree with that on the whole. But for the purposes of talking about Teal, I am going to say that it's controversial. People say they experience this, and I believe in believing victims. So I'm never going to start by assuming someone's lying to me or assuming that it's not true. Because again, regardless, if that's what they're experiencing, that's their reality. But one of the things I wanted to bring up is that although the Satanic Panic was a pretty, at least country-wide thing for us in this time period, there was a really high uptick, or I guess concentration of this fear in Utah, where Teal grew up.
Mm.
And Teal went to a psychologist pretty early on, as she should have. Her parents were like, something's going on, and we should get this looked at because we care and love about our child.
Mm-hmm.
And so they take her, and the psychologist, Barbara Snow, helps her recover some memories of satanic ritual abuse for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
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 And because of this, and because of the work that they did together, this is now Teal's basis for having been through the worst of the worst. I can't say I heard it from her mouth, but in one of the many episodes of Mormon Stories that I listened to, that did that 3.5 hour long interview with her friend and like a 4-part, maybe a 4-hour interview with her second or third husband, they both did say things like, she's claimed things like, the Holocaust survivors have nothing on her.
Oh.
She's also claimed she was an alien, but that's neither here nor there. So there's some stuff going on.
is it possible that she did experience some ritualistic abuse that might fit the definition of ritual as we know it, but maybe it was by somebody else and not a satanic cult, and it has been like rewired in her brain because it's easier to accept that it was some stranger or some group of people you don't know rather than maybe a loved one or a family friend or something. I mean, these are just things I'm pondering.
Right, and they're totally possible. The things I will say is that she did open up a police investigation on the alleged abuser who has denied it. The police investigation found no evidence of any abuse. And so that was closed. There was no charges made or arrest. And also, I do just want to say, I don't believe that Teal believes she's lying. Which kind of makes it not a lie. Like, it's not intentional.
I don't believe that you believe that she believes that she's lying.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But I will say, after that police investigation, there's also no evidence from her childhood that suggests this, although she does say there is in one of her journals, but she came up with this, like, coded language, like her own language, or maybe, like, you know, those coded, like, puzzles. It was something like that in a childhood journal that she claims is evidence of it, but nobody else can interpret that but her.
Okay.
The other thing is, I do not doubt that she has had significant hardship. If there is not significant abuse, she has some of the, in my opinion, hardest mental health that I've seen without a prerequisite in a long time. So yeah. I believe that she has some abuse. I don't see how that all can develop without it. But I also know that mental health doesn't always work that way. Sometimes we're just predisposed. And that's okay. That's part of life. And it's good to talk about. It's good to get a lot of this stuff out in the open. But that doesn't automatically make you an authority on healing other people.
You got it.
And that's the thing. If you almost drown, you're not a lifeguard. Because you almost drowned. You're a lifeguard because you take the class and you know the signs of somebody drowning and you know how to do CPR and you have all of these things in your wheelhouse and tools to help people. And I don't know that we have that. And I think we're really playing with fire if this is where our search for health and healing ends. So next week, we're going to talk a lot about Teal's childhood. We're going to talk about who she is and who the players are and how we got here and what here is. We're also going to start to dive into some of the accusations of the cult and why her haters call her the suicide catalyst. We're going to talk about one of her first followers who did take their own life, Leslie. And we are also going to at least eventually talk about these documentaries and the investigations as to whether or not they are a cult by people who specialize in this. So please take care of yourselves. But before we leave, I need to say two quick things. First of all, I know that this isn't a typical episode, but please hang in there with us. This is all so important to know for the upcoming episodes to sort of make these interpretations and analyze this from your own point of view. Because I'm not going to tell you what to think. I'm just going to tell you what I think. And what I know to be true. So today is a lot of the what I know to be true and psychology. But we are going to get into the deep end of Teal Swan, and it's not always pretty. That being said, lastly, I don't feel it's appropriate to wait until the end of this series as a whole to give you guys resources. We're talking about some really heavy shit. It's dark. It's deep. We're going to talk about a lot of mental health things. We're already talking about psych terms and sort of this scary and very real phenomenon of fallible memories and what even the most well-intended people can do that creates harm out of that. So I'm not going to wait until the end of a three or four part series to give you these. So if you or someone you know is struggling mentally, please remember to call or text 988 in a mental health emergency. You can also call 211 to find out local resources or get any mobile crisis if need be. And you can also check out some of the resources in the sources link down below to find information on cult recovery if you're looking to escape or you have a loved one that you think is looking to escape as well. But that's part one. We're just dipping our toe in today.
My goodness. Well, I'm excited. I feel a lot of things at the moment.
Yeah. Is it that you're concerned about technology taking over and that you as a people are excited to take policing into your own hands but don't understand the repercussions of that or who it benefits? And I, the all-knowing narrator of this, am telling you that it's not you that it benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're telling me?
You took it right from my brain. Do you have telepathy? Stop looking at me like that. Her eyes just got really big, guys. Freaky.
I'm trying not to blink. It's really hard.
You have a really hard time.
Wow. Yeah, if you guys want to check out some of her stuff, I have had the most phenomenal time listening to these interviews and these journalism reports on all of this. The Deep End on, I watched it on Apple TV. I think it's on Hulu too. Phenomenal. Really great to see. Really helpful and enlightening. That's the one where the documentary crew got to stay there for like 3 years.
Which is insane. I wonder if any of the crew started to subscribe to what was being said. I mean, you live in it.
Yeah. I think that the interesting thing about this whole case, right, is that so much of it is true.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the hard part. I'm not encouraging you to disbelieve or to not believe anything that she says. I'm saying you be fucking careful and you look it up and you make sure there's a .org or an APA endorsed, American Psychology Association endorsed study that talks about it. And then fine, we're good. But if not, you need to take that with a heaping grain of salt.
Well, we've talked about this in other cults that we've talked about, meaning Nexium, in that, or Mother God, is that there isn't a... If the ideas were so terrible and so terrifying, nobody would have gone.
Right.
So it didn't start that way. It doesn't start that way in the ground level. And sometimes, if it's going to get bad, it gets bad once you're already there and once you're already...
In
and the web is sort of around you. It's kind of, you know, it'd be very difficult for you to leave. That's very easy for you to stay. So you're gonna stay, right? Even if there are red flags, you're kind of looking for the white ones because you don't want to accept that this decision was a bad one. Like, there's a lot of your brain's doing a lot of things in that time, but also, you know, just the big thing, just consider it like an abusive relationship.
Right.
If it was abusive day one after the first date, there wouldn't have been a second date.
No, there'd be no relationship to become abusive.
These things happen with time.
Gradually, slowly. And like, I think it was on Mormon Stories. I love the interviewer there. He sounds just like Seth Rogen. it's very cute to me, but also... It's a very interesting podcast because it's also, I think it's Utah based, and it's basically people getting out of Mormonism and people who are still in it who are looking for like a healthier way to exist in it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're not political. We're also not going to tell you our religious beliefs in any way or try to make those yours. I don't believe that Mormonism is a cult, but I've heard things that have said it has cult-like tendencies. So this podcast is basically to look at cults of all kinds. They've talked to cult experts. They interview a lot of these people on like what coercive control looks like and what these tactics are that people use to sort of make that happen while still having you by their side. And so as a whole, like, it is not all Mormonism based, but they do talk to a lot of people that are Utah based and about all of these things. It's so interesting. But the guy says in one of them that he's like, you'll be sitting there and you'll like fall into this loop of her videos. And then she'll say something that come out of left field or like they're totally out of pocket. And you're like, where the fuck did that come from? Like, she's talking about pretty normal, pretty ground level psychological terms and phenomenon. And then she's like, oh, hey, and also I'm an alien.
And when I was sent here, you bet your ass I was going to tell the world about the satanic rituals I saw.
Yes.
Damn it.
Well, and for me, the biggest concern going into this is truly, if it's not from something like this that you hear of Teal Swan, most people hear of her because they're having really significant mental health issues. Why else do you go searching for answers and understanding on these issues and topics? You know, the cryptocurrency, maybe not so much, but like, she's had videos called like, I want to kill myself, in parentheses, what to do if you're suicidal, because people, when they're in that big of a crisis, aren't thinking to type in what to do if I'm suicidal. They're typing in, I want to kill myself. And so that's how she's getting these people. And it's these people in some of the most vulnerable moments of their life, sort of walking willingly into this web. And that's where I'm so significantly concerned about this, because it's not the videos and most of the people following her. Of course, she's going to say a few things you like.
Right.
But it's what happens when that's all you have. So you're forced to believe everything she says.
Mm.
And that's where this gets a little sticky.
Well, I'm excited for next week.
Ugh, me too.
A little pissed you're making me wait.
I know I am. I'm sorry.
Well, if you liked what you heard today and you want to hear more of it, you should definitely download and like follow. Rate, review, subscribe, leave a comment. I don't know.
Ring the bell. Just whatever, kidding, we're not on YouTube.
Whatever they say. So you don't miss the next episode of this. I know this was like really laying the groundwork so that next week we can dive into it and we kind of have the context going into it. So I love that.
Yes.
I think it's easier to have that ahead of time rather than as you go.
I think it'd be really hard to describe the interaction of trauma and memory in the middle of talking about why trauma and memory are so concerning in this particular thing. So it'll be really good. It'll be really interesting. Well, I won't say it'll be really good. I hope it'll be really good. It'll be really interesting if nothing else. And please, like seriously, 9,000%, check out the linked sources and resources. The resources are going to be also found on our Instagram, which you can find in our link tree below. But I mean it. I had 19 hours of just consumed media, not including like articles and news and all of these other written pieces of evidence that I'm using for this. So it's going to be a hell of a time, but you have a lot to sort through if you're interested in hyperfixating like I was. But I'm so excited.
Super excited.
So that being said, like I just said, if you wanted to see our Instagram, the people, the places, the things, if you wanted to send us an email, your take on this, if you're excited, if you think I'm full of shit because Teal Swan has millions of followers and what do I know, you can do that to our email. And you would also find that in our link tree below.
Heck yeah.
But if I do look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.